All right, I guess it's 10 o'clock. We're going to start for the sake of time. Quickly, we should go around the room for some new faces and introduce ourselves. Zaya Chukwuza, the MPO.
Tony O. Johnson, Federal Highway.
Craig Lithium with the MPO.
Aaron Schrieffer with the MPO.
Matt Schrieffer with the MPO.
John Petkosic with David Matthews Associates.
Greg Watt with Economic Development Coalition Southwest Indiana.
Nick Hall, KYTC.
Rick Wilson with Mets.
Pam Drock with the MPO.
Carrie Aiken with the MPO.
Steve Nunez with Archibald himself.
Jason Orange, KYTC.
Carolyn Fisher, Department of Metropolitan Development.
Brian Aldridge with Stantec Consulting Services.
Steve Knight Page with Parsons.
Laura Lamb with the MPO.
Jeff Whitaker with Clubman Group.
And we have a walk in.
It's Thomas Witt with KYTC.
All right, thank you very much. First item of the agenda is election of the officers. I'd like to propose that Greg Watson to be the chairman. I already talked to him and I got his blessing.
Am I late for this meeting?
Is there a second?
Forgive me, I honestly thought you were digging at
No.
If we can get that, sure.
Any other nominations? It's closed.
Would move to approve by acclamation.
All right. Congratulations, Greg.
Thank you.
And since John Stoll's not here, we're going to nominate him for vice chair. Any second or any?
Second.
All right. It's closed. And in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And John is the vice chair. So thanks, Greg. And it's all yours.
Oh, okay. Thanks. This follows the agenda, so I'm glad you gave me this agenda for this time. So you should have been previously sent the minutes. Hopefully everybody had an opportunity to review those. If not, they're in front of you. Are there any corrections and or additions to the minutes as they were presented? If not, entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Further discussion? Not. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's approved. Moving on to old business, Pam, you're going to be working with us on a project.
That's correct. For the City of Ensville projects, Covert Avenue Road Diet, right-of-way engineering is underway. Washington Avenue, 2nd Street, Parrot Street project, right-of-way appraising process is complete. Weinbach Avenue Road Diet. Stage 3 plans are being finalized for submission to NDOT. That project is on the July of 2018 letting. Pigeon Creek Greenway, High Rail Corridor. Project was let for bid on the 18th of January. It's been awarded to Coberstein Contracting, and the low bid was approximately $2.2 million. Mid-levee project under Pigeon Creek Greenway as well. Coordination to secure the levy permit is ongoing. The Evansville Sign Inventory and Replacement Project, Phase 3 sign project. The city and the consultant are currently negotiating the preliminary engineering contract. Vanderburgh County Projects, Columbia Delaware Bridge, right-of-way engineering and the APAs are complete. The environmental document is under review by NDOT. A Newburgh Rivertown Trail. Final tracing documents were submitted to NDOT in January 15th of 2018. The veteran work plan has been completed and confirmation of eligibility for reimbursement is pending. The project has been moved to an October 2018 letting. Warwick County Projects, Bell Road, right-of-way engineering is underway. Lincoln Avenue Project, it's under construction right now. Phases 2 and 3, which include the Bell Road intersection and then between Bell Road and Old 261, that section is nearly complete. Phase 1 is under construction and, back up. Phases 2 and 3 are between Bell and Old State Road 261. Phase 1 is the Bell Road intersection, and it's still underway. Storm sewer installation is being done on Phase 4. Phase 4 is from State Road 261 to Len Road. Oak Grove Road Project, Phase 3, it was let for bid in January and has been awarded to Regal Inc. for the low bid of approximately $3.7 million. Warrick County Trails Safe Routes to School Project, red flag analysis was submitted to NDOT for review. And then the I-69 Ohio River Crossing Project, and we'll hear more about this later on the agenda. Open house meetings were held in February 6th and 7th. Each of the open houses included two brief presentations about the refined alternatives being evaluated in the draft environmental impact statement, or the DEIS. Copies of the open house materials will be available online. We have the website there, and we also brought some of the handouts to the meeting today as well. And then you can also go to the project office and get information about it as well. Any questions?
Questions? Okay. Well, why don't we move on to Matt and Old Business Section 5310 Program Management Plan.
All right. Last month, I brought before you a draft of the Section 5310 Enhanced Mobility of Seniors and Individuals with Disabilities Program Management Plan. We also had a 30-day public comment period that ran from January 2nd. February 1st. We advertised that in the Courier and the Henderson Gleaner, as well as on our website. The plan identifies the policies, procedures that we must follow in order to be eligible for the 5310 grant program through the FTA, as well as what the subrecipients, Mets, Heart, and the nonprofits need to do. We had it open. We sent it to the nonprofits and everybody. Didn't hear any comments. So we're asking for your approval of this documentation.
Are there any questions on that in this regard? If not, I would entertain a motion for approval. Is there a second, please?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved.
Thank you.
Let's move on to new business. Matt, this is you again, the 2018 Transit Asset Management Targets.
All right. In July of 2016, the FTA issued a final rule requiring FTA recipients to have minimum standards for transit asset management. The first requirement was to come up with targets for transit assets in July of 2017 of last year. And we created targets and you guys approved those last year. The table on the bottom shows what we had initially targeted and what our actual was. We do our targets based on what we anticipate receiving as far as buses or improvements to facilities. We hit our targets or did better with the nonprofits. We retired some older vehicles and got some new ones, so that helped with those targets. So the 2018 targets, back up. From this point forward, they required us to do the first set of targets in the middle of last year, but from now on, we're gonna do these at the beginning of each year. So the 2018 target is what we're hoping to reach by the end of 2018. You can see those targets as well on the right side of that table at the bottom. And so what I'm asking is for your approval of these targets. Before I go on that, the FTA is also requiring all the agencies to create a more detailed TAM plan that we're beginning to work with. Mets will be working with you here shortly on getting that done. The TAM is required, the plan is required in October. So these targets will be a part of that plan, and there'll be a lot more detail than what these simple targets show. So hopefully we'll have that all organized by October.
Specifically mentioned Mets, does that include the nonprofits too? We have to develop teams?
I will work with you, but what I'm going to put in there is your vehicle fleet information that you've already provided, so I've pretty much got everything from you that I need.
Okay.
I might ask for your input if there's anything you want to mention and include, but... Mm-hmm.
So will the Evansville MPO be developing a group TAM for the nonprofits, the 5310 recipients?
So my plan was to have a group plan with both Meds and Heart and include the nonprofits. From what I understand, the nonprofits aren't really required to be a part of the TAM plan, but we've got the information, so we might as well include them to keep them updated.
Any additional comments? Anyone wants to make any of the partners?
All this has been sent to Susan, right?
Not yet. We will be doing it.
Yep. As soon as you can get it.
Yeah. Okay.
This one's a question. Do you anticipate being able to meet these targets with the transit funds, or do you think you'll have to use SHN money for that, or...
Between the 5307, 5339, and some CMAC, we plan on meeting these goals. Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Any other comments, questions? You're looking for an action on this as well?
Yep, the approval for the 2018 targets.
So would entertain a motion in that regard?
So moved.
So moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Approved. We'll move on now to Aaron and the MTP 2045 plan update. This is just informational, no action required, correct?
Yeah. Yep, we just wanted to announce that the MPO is officially starting the 2045 transportation plan update. This plan will replace our existing 2040 plan. And our goal is to have this plan finished and adopted by the end of this year. So currently in the MPO, we're looking through our background data, gathering information, working on our existing conditions. And we've also been working on a survey that we plan on sending out in the next week or so. So we'll make sure we send it out to you guys. And if you want to take it, send it to coworkers, family, friends, whoever, that we would appreciate that. And we will have a few meetings throughout the process where you guys will have an opportunity to provide input. And we'll keep you posted throughout the process as when those meetings will be. And right now, that's it. We're just getting started on it, so I just want to let everyone know.
Any questions, suggestions, comments in that regard?
I got one comment. Mm-hmm. For this go-round, let's get involved Central Office.
Okay.
And I can coordinate that for y'all.
Sure.
That way you can make sure everybody's data is consistent, especially with I-69 going on.
Yep.
Same with KYTC as well. And then probably sooner than later, we probably need to start working on the funding marks and stuff too. So it might be something that might be a lot of back and forth.
Sure.
We do that, as you know, every time. But so yeah, I guess you... I won't probably guaranteeing a little bit more projects from Central Office for this plan.
Not really more projects. I think something that we did with Bloomington was we understand that you got Vincent's district and you got Central Office, and sometimes communication don't flow as adequate as it should flow. And so one of the things that we did with Bloomington was bring NDOT to the table and vice versa, have Bloomington at the table with NDOT, so they can discuss those things, compare things, agree or don't agree on things. But at the end of it, everybody was cool with everything that was being put out, especially with certain languages and stuff like that. So.
And what did you say the schedule was for getting this updated as far as when you expect to have a final version out for?
Our goal at the moment is we want to have it adopted by November. But I think technically we have until January before it needs to be. So we're trying to get it a couple months in advance.
So this will include a lot of performance measures,
that has been an ongoing discussion. Yep. We're trying to work through that.
And we're going to update the freight, the comment period part of, or send cards
survey.
Or survey, thank you. Send a survey to the freight groups and get more information or updated information on freight also.
Any other comments, questions? Thank you, Aaron. Let's move on to other business, probably why we're seeing the video run right now.
Yes.
With Brian talking about the I-69 Ohio River crossing. If you've not had an opportunity to see the videos, it's pretty impressive what they've done and the alternatives, so please.
Well, on behalf of the entire I-69 project team, we certainly appreciate the opportunity to come speak with you guys again. Once again, my name is Brian Aldrich. I'm the traffic lead for the Parsons team. We're the consulting team working with NDOT and KYTC on the Ohio River crossing project. And as you've heard, obviously we've had a couple public meetings this week. And just, can I get a quick show of hands of who was able to attend either one of the meetings in Henderson or in Evansville? So this is good, because some of the information I want to share today is we'll take a little bit of a slant, though, talking more about the traffic aspects of the project that has been shared with the public thus far. And one of the reasons for that is because we honestly don't know a lot of stuff right now. You know, the question I kept getting repeatedly asked over the last two evenings are, you guys haven't heard alternative, right? We really don't. Obviously, we don't. It's part of the process we're going through. We're still analyzing alternatives. We're looking at tolling scenarios. And there truly is not a preferred alternative. And that's part of why we are doing the work that we're doing. So hopefully, by the end of this year, we have an opportunity to announce to the public what that preferred alternative is. But what I thought I'd start off with is just a real quick recap of what we discussed at our last meeting back in October, for those of you that weren't here. So that had a lot to do with the traffic work and the updates to the Evansville MDO model that we were working on last summer and last spring. We'll talk a little bit about how we have come up with the alternatives that were presented to the public, those that you see on the screen behind you. And then I'll quickly kind of go through each one of those alternatives, what's unique about them, what's included, what's not included with each. And then I'll gladly take any questions and I'll answer anything that I can. And for those of you that haven't met Steve Nykase, Steve is our overall consultant project manager with Parsons. And if I can't answer the question, Steve probably can. So with that, let's get started. Back in April of last year, we had our first round of public meetings and we presented our initial set of alternatives. And back then we were still referring to these as corridors because they truly were corridors. We hadn't developed alignments at that time. So these were generally looking at a band, maybe 1,000 to 2,000 feet in width, within which we could see the opportunity to develop a feasible alternative. So within each one of those, we looked at opportunities where interchanges could be built, you know, generally how the alignment would fall along the terrain, but that was really all the detail that we presented back in April. And just for everybody's information, two alternatives that were presented back in April were some of the alternatives that were originally looked at or very close variations of alternatives that were explored back in the 2004 DEIS. So that eastern alternative that crossed the Green River and the Ohio River and had a new interchange with the Covert Avenue interchange area with existing I-69. And then the central two corridor, which would have been what was referred to as the preferred alternative from the 2004 DEIS. In addition to those two, there were three new alternatives. Central one was a crossing of the Ohio River, very close in proximity to what was the originally preferred alternative, Central two. And then we had two alternatives that were essentially along the US 41 strip through Henderson. And we named those, as you might imagine, based on where they crossed the Ohio River. West were West 1, West 2, Central, and then East. A few months after that, we had been doing some work, collecting field data, collecting whatever information we could get out there, including the public feedback that we got from the first round of public open houses back in April, and we screened those down. And so the three alternatives that were carried forward were Central 1, then West Corridor 1, West Corridor 2. And we were kind of hoping there may be an opportunity to combine West Corridor 1 and West Corridor 2 at that time, but they did have enough variation that it was decided we really needed to carry them both forward as two separate and unique alternatives, and we'll talk about the specifics of those.
May I ask a question? So sure, you have please. No build as one of the alternatives?
Absolutely.
That's no still a consideration as well?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, the fear is we get back to where we were in 2004, where we don't have a financially feasible solution here. The no build's always an alternative.
Okay.
It may not be the alternative that we want or the public wants, but it's always an alternative. And it provides not just that, it's also a baseline for us to compare what our impacts are. We always look at what the impacts are compared to our no-bill scenario. So it really is an alternative. Good question, thanks for asking. We also, as I mentioned earlier, we spent a lot of time last spring and last summer going through the process of updating the travel demand model for use in this study. And one of the big aspects of that was to try to bring it up to a more current base year. So the model was last updated in 2012. It had a 2010 base year and a 2040 future year. It was decided we wanted to go ahead and bring that up to 2015 and then have a 2045 future year. So some of the stuff we worked on back then, looking at future population projections. So the data we've used for population purely comes from the Kentucky State Data Center and Stats Indiana. So we're not doing our own projections. We're using the state officially recognized sources for that information. And just some tidbits to share. Henderson County is expected to have a decrease of about 10% of its population between 2015 and 2045. Warren County is the most rapidly growing in terms of percentage, with between 15 and 20% increase between 2015 and 2045. Posey County on the west side is also losing population, about 20% decline between 2015 and 2045. So while we were in the process of developing our population, and particularly our employment projections, we went and met with all the counties one-on-one and had some conversations about, do these trends make sense? Do you agree with them? Do you disagree with them? If they're wrong, tell us why they're wrong. And there's a specific question we're trying to get across, though, and ask, what impacts do you see to your county specific to I-69, the completion of this Ohio River crossing? And that's an important question for us to ask because we're trying to account for future land use that might potentially change as a result of the bridge crossing.
The challenge you have with population data, in particular as you're projecting out, it's based upon a snapshot in time of what's occurring now that has occurred historically without looking at what's going to be occurring in the future, in particular economic activity, or the fact that new infrastructure is actually even going to be built to support this.
Correct.
So how do you address that within the narrative?
So population projections are provided by those state sources on a relatively regular basis, every 3 to 4 years. And they try to take a 10-year plus look backwards to see if the trend has changed. So they're based on three primary components. What are the birth and death rates within the county? What's the migration into and out of the county? What's the third one? I'm trying to think off the top of my head here. But that's the type of data that they're using to make these projections. And so we see that from time to time, subsequent projections may be significantly different than what was last presented. You know, for example, you know, looking at some of the counties in more rural Kentucky, the projections from 2011 to the later data sets from 2014 and 2015 have shown a more significant decline in population than was previously projected. And that's a result of, you know, a lot of the millennials are tending to not want to live in rural areas or moving into the urban areas. So our more urban communities tend to have increasing population where our rural communities tend to have decreasing population. And so that's kind of the trend we're seeing for Henderson County. Now, Henderson, though, for example, has the last two data sets that I've seen have shown a decline in population. The trend line may be a little bit different, but the general trend is that it is declining. But you're absolutely right. It doesn't take into account the implementation of a project such as this. But at the same time, if you look at, again, back to Henderson County, most of this project would actually be constructed in Henderson, regardless of which alternative we're talking about. The vast majority of the length of the project is in Kentucky. And the areas within which we're talking about building this corridor are either already urbanized with the western alternatives, or they are in areas that are currently farmland or floodplain. So the opportunities for any significant development surrounding the future I-69 is pretty limited. So the trends that we're already seeing, so again, the growth along I-69 in Warwick County, where we've got Deaconess and all the development that's going along the Lloyd, you know, this project isn't going to change that, certainly. Is it going to accelerate it? Probably not. It's happening anyway. The interstate's already there. But in Henderson, we just don't see much opportunity for growth. So I know I'm taking a long time to answer your question, but we just don't see this project as having a significant impact on land use. And that's kind of a conversation we've been having with FHWA since back in the spring, is that we're trying to account for what impacts this project might have, but as far as changing fundamentally the land use within the region, it's probably just not going to have much of a change. Okay?
Debatable, right?
Well, I mean, listen, here's the issue with data, and I live in this world every single day, and we track so much of this stuff. The only true time you see population is in the decennial years. Everything else is modeling. Call it what it is.
Yeah.
Things change that impact these numbers. And so you're projecting out to 2045. Who knows what's going to be happening next year? And I understand you have to have something that as you're projecting that. But you know, I was probably looking at less of land use, but what's going to be driving population growth, because that's what you're talking about in employment growth. And you're also what probably not taking into consideration what technology is going to do that employment growth with the labor. So
yeah.
I just kind of want to know how you're addressing that within the narrative itself.
You know, technology is being taken into consideration somewhat in the employment, though, because the general trend over the last 20 years or so has been we're losing manufacturing jobs in general and replacing those with retail jobs. And so that's why in some cases you see an increase. Henderson is a perfect example. We just talked about the fact that we're projecting a 10% roughly decrease in population, but we're showing an increase in jobs. And the reason for that is, in many cases, you know, you've got the county surrounding that may be serving as a bedroom community, but you've also got people that today and in the future are going to be working more than one job, because the retail jobs don't necessarily pay as well as those manufacturing jobs that were there previously. So part-time employment, the side gigs, things like that are becoming ever more prominent. And that, you know, that's just the trend that we've seen recently. Is that going to be the trend in the future? We don't know, but that's kind of what it's based on. And so that's kind of what's unique about employment projections is that there's not a source for those. We have to develop those on our own. There are some proprietary sources. You can go out and buy data, and there are a couple different companies that provide that, but they tend to be extremely aggressive. And one of those is a company called Dun & Bradstreet. Yeah. And we've used those throughout Kentucky, throughout the region, and they would show that even in a county where the population is declining very significantly, moving forward, because they're looking at employment trends all the way back before World War II, they show that there's still this very high increase in employment, and it's not reality. So what we have done, instead of trying to use one of those proprietary sources, is we developed our own projections looking at Bureau of Economic Analysis trends going back through 1990. So we've looked back 25 years in an effort to try to look ahead the next 30.
Is it possible, and I don't want to belabor this point, we use Chimera Economics Analytics out of Richmond, Virginia for all of our data sets. We're showing something different than what you're saying, in particular with manufacturing. In the last 12 months, we've actually grown 2,400 manufacturing.
Yeah,
so
Gibson County is a perfect example of Toyota. Manufacturing certainly is.
And so I'd love to be able to at least share some of that data with you.
Sure.
And they've got some real-time data that they utilize that they're tracking based upon some sources. And you take a look at it and evaluate it, because I think the picture is slightly different what you're projecting here.
In terms of the overall population, or just
population? Overall population, we knew that there was declines projected for Henderson and Posey County within the marketplace. But in terms of employment, because you've got employment estimates up there, we're looking at something slightly different. And in particular, one of the issues that we have, I just looked at, so that they have a module that we subscribe to called Jobs EQ. It'll show us real time what jobs are in our market at any one time, from retail all the way through very technical, what's available, and they tell us that projects out about 90% of the actual demand in the marketplace. As of last week, I didn't look at it this morning, we had 9,200 positions open in our market. So when I say the market, that's our metro, which has gone from 6 counties to 4 counties, plus Gibson. So we always look at 5 counties in that regard.
Yeah.
So it probably gives it's not rosy picture, it's a slightly different picture. And I think as you're going in and looking at projecting this, particularly as you're looking at how do we get this funded, we probably want as accurate a picture as possible. If that helps, I'd be more than happy to share that data with you.
Yeah, and as far as the modeling is concerned, the population is more critical, because the way the model works, you've got trips being produced and trips being attracted. So when I talk about a trip, it's just a vehicular trip is what we're talking about specifically here. And so if you don't have the population correct, you don't get the trips produced internally. The external trips are different. We'll talk about those later. But in terms of the accuracy of the data we're talking about, the population more prudent. But one of our goals was to try to more accurately project for future employment. And so, like I said, in most cases, like in Posey and in Henderson, we're showing either flat or slightly increasing employment levels, even though the population is declining. But you do see, again, some pretty significant increases in employment in Vandenberg and in Ward counties. And this is just kind of the overall summary after all those meetings occurred, and we kind of refined the data. Population today within the five-county area, about 352,000, increasing to about 367. Employment, 216,000, increasing to about 259,000. Talked a little bit about historic traffic volumes along US 41, and you know the trend line that's been, if you look back again to about 1990, seen a slight increase in traffic historically with that trend. If you were to just extend that trend line straight out to 2045, the volume would be about 45,000 vehicles per day if nothing changed. And our no-build projections are a little bit higher than that because of the completion of I-69 between Bloomington and Indianapolis. So it's a little bit higher than that. But again, just historical trend being extrapolated on out to the future, about 45,000 would be the future projection there. I've already mentioned a little bit about tolling. And again, the main point we're trying to get across today or this week at the public meetings is that this NEPA process does not make any decisions regarding toll. We don't set toll rates, we don't set toll policy, we don't set business plans. That comes after the record of decision from the FHWA. There's an investment grade study that has to be undertaken in order to determine the future toll amounts and the revenues to be realized from those. But as far as our baseline for comparison, if you want to look at another regional project, the Ohio River Bridges project in Louisville is probably the best example because tolling just was implemented on that in December of 2016. So we've got a new downtown bridge on I-65 and a new east end crossing on Indiana 265 and Kentucky 841 or I-265 and Kentucky that are both tolled now. And these are the rates that are currently being used in Louisville. So with transponder, autos pay $2. Without a transponder, they pay $4. And you can register your plate online without getting an actual transponder and pay $3. This is kind of, again, our baseline. So we're looking, this is one option that could be potentially on the table. But again, we honestly have no idea what the tolling is going to look like. So our charge is to look at a range of tolling scenarios that could be considered reasonable and determine what the impacts are associated with those. So I've been asked repeatedly the last 2 days, what are the forecasts for this project? We don't have forecasts right now. We've got a range of numbers we're looking at, but there truly are not official forecasts for the crossings of the Ohio River. Okay, so that's kind of the quick recap of the information we talked about last fall. So let's talk now about work that's been undertaken since that time. And the screening report supplement is really kind of an evolution of the process that we just talked about going from April to July. This is taking us from July to where we are today. And so refining those three alternatives or those three corridors we just talked about. And so what we started out with is looking at what are the infrastructure options that need to be explored here. And so with each one of those three build alternatives, and again, the no build is still an alternative, but with the three build alternatives, we wanted to look at the various configurations of crossings. So maintaining just a single I-69 bridge, building that and not maintaining either of 41 bridges is an alternative. Building I-69 as a four-lane facility and retaining just one US 41 bridge is an alternative. And then building four-lane I-69 and keeping both 41 bridges as an alternative. So to kind of summarize that, there's 10 different unique infrastructure bridge scenarios, if you will, that have been examined. And so this just kind of gives you an idea of the number of lanes on I-69 and the number of bridges and the resulting number of lanes that would be maintained with US 41. So obviously, in a situation where we'd be maintaining a single US 41 bridge, be one lane in each direction. So kind of where it was back prior to the mid-1960s when we only had a single bridge in service. So in each one of those, the first option is building a six-lane I-69, not maintaining any 41 bridges. The second option, maintaining, building a four-lane I-69 bridge and keeping one bridge open. And then the last one would be building a four-lane I-69 structure and keeping both of the US 41 bridges open. And this is just kind of a graphical summary of that same information. So got our corridors, our alternatives at the top, and then each of the three bridge scenarios kind of outlined there. What we showed here is that if we were, just for representation purposes, maintaining a southbound bridge on US 41. That decision's not been made. Both bridges are considered eligible for the National Historic Register, so a process would have to be undertaken to determine which of the two bridges makes the most sense to maintain. From a purely engineering standpoint, the southbound bridge might make the most sense because it's the younger of the two. But you know, even that bridge is now over 50 years old. By the time this project is open to traffic, you know, the northbound bridge is going to be getting up there close to 90 years old. So that's certainly something that's got to be taken into consideration. But again, the point to get across to the public this week is that we can maintain both bridges in perpetuity and keep them safe. The question is, at what point is it no longer cost effective to do that? You know, the analogy is trying to maintain a used car. At a certain point, it starts nickel and diming you to death. And at what point is it no longer cost effective to do that? And so that's one of the things we've tried to do, is look ahead at what the long-term maintenance costs would be associated with both of those bridges. And if you look out into the lifespan of what a typical tolling type project might entail, so 35 years or so, you're looking at $125 to $130 million to maintain each one of those bridges. So that's obviously a pretty substantial cost item. So with each of those scenarios we've just talked about, we have looked at a wide range of tolling scenarios. We're looking at tolling one facility, not tolling the other, tolling them both, not tolling anything. That's also an alternative, of course. Don't see that really being feasible, but we have to look at that just to see what the impacts are. And so, as I mentioned, we don't have really true forecasts right now because of this range of scenarios that have been explored. And we've looked at over 40 different unique tolling scenarios with each one of these infrastructure scenarios. Unofficially, we've looked at a lot more than 40 just for testing purposes, but we've truly got 40 that we've presented to the project team. And so in terms of our low traffic scenario, those are generally representing options that have perhaps one of the bridges not tolled if we're talking about a two crossing alternative. And so those would also generally represent a low revenue scenario because we're only tolling one crossing. And so that's why in many of these cases, for example, like this scenario four, we see a very low volume of traffic on I-69. A very high volume of traffic remaining on US 41 in the future, and that's because we're maintaining in that scenario two US 41 bridges, and this particular low traffic option would represent not tolling US 41. And so that's some information that we had shared with the public last summer, is that not tolling US 41 and maintaining both those bridges has a dramatic impact on traffic on I-69. And so you kind of see the general spread of traffic volumes. Generally speaking, 50 to 55,000 vehicles per day is what we see in the future. Now, you might say that sounds a little low compared to volume or compared to projections that have been presented previously on studies that have been undertaken years past, but this is the first time we've truly taken a look at tolling and what the impacts are. And what you generally see with a tolling project is that you do lose some discretionary trips, meaning if it's not a commuter trip, it's you're crossing the river for shopping or recreation or something like that, you might make a different decision because you know you have to pay a toll. And so there is going to be some loss of that. We generally see that loss being higher in the first years, and it tends to normalize as you move further out, but you do have some loss of traffic regardless.
So have they seen any of this in Louisville?
Absolutely, yeah.
They have seen loss of traffic?
Yeah.
So are they going to the 2nd Street Bridge?
Well, that has yet to be determined.
Or over Sherman-Minton, or what?
There are recent counts that have been collected just this month, and they're going to be collected in the months ahead. The general trend, though, right now, so before the project started construction back in 2012, I-65 downtown was carrying about 120,000 vehicles a day across the river. Now, the last year that's been fully open to traffic with tolls, the downtown and East End combined are averaging about 90,000 a day. Sherman-Minton hasn't picked up that much. And 2nd Street was already so busy, it couldn't absorb much more traffic. So there's been a pretty significant loss of trips crossing the river. We don't know what that number is right now.
Well, what's shifted over to the East End, the far East End then?
The East End, well, that 90,000 is combined
the East End,
the two.
But the Sherman-Minton has not made up for anything on that side.
Well, we think it's increased a little bit, but not 30,000, certainly.
So
something to remember is there was 3 years of construction.
Right.
So it was very congested to get across there. And so people changed their, where they would shop, where they would work, just because of that friction.
And well, there's more alternatives. I spent 6 years working downtown Louisville. So I know how to get in and out of there, and it's, you will change your patterns. Right. But there's also other alternatives that have been developed on the Indiana side for shopping that didn't previously exist.
Right, right. And so like I said, there are follow-up studies being undertaken currently to try to assess where that traffic has gone, if it's using one of the other bridges or not. But in any tolling project that we've worked on previously, we see within the first 3 or 4 years that there is a higher loss of traffic that tends to normalize, like I said. So we take that into account in our projections because we're trying to estimate what the revenues might potentially be associated with each one of these scenarios. So we want to see those, again, first few years of operation, what that impact might be. Try to account for it. Okay, so the other major point we're trying to get across to the public this week is based on all these projections we're looking at, again, we're not seeing anything over the middle of 50,000 vehicles per day range, crossing total crossing volume. So based on that, we don't see the need for more than 6 lanes of traffic crossing the Ohio River. And so whether you're talking about a 6-lane I-69 bridge or a 4-lane I-69 bridge with 2 lanes on US 41, 6 lanes is what we're saying that is necessary. And the other question we've been asked repeatedly over the last year or so is, well, how much of this traffic is actually passing through the region? Because the goal would be, obviously, building an interstate connection, we would get that interstate-type traffic off of US 41. Well, based on all the information we've looked at, so this includes a number of different data sources, the general percentage is about 20% is truly passing through this 5-county region. And that's crossing the river and passing completely through. It tends to be a little higher for trucks, a little bit lower for automobiles, but the overall vehicle percentage is about 20. However, we do see an increase in the future. So not only does the overall volume of traffic crossing the Ohio River increase, but we also see a higher percentage of through traffic. And this is regardless of the scenario we're talking about. This is purely because of the implementation and completion of sections 5 and 6 to Indianapolis and the opportunity to have a better interstate connection all the way through Indiana and Kentucky. So, but that's kind of the main point that you're across there, is that the through percentage does increase, but at no point does it ever become the majority. Oh, I should have mentioned too, the truck percentage also increases again because of that interstate connection. So today, about 10% of the traffic on the Ohio River crossings are trucks, about 20% we're projecting. Let's talk a little bit now about the refined alternatives, and I'll try to keep this brief. And I've got, if anybody's interested, we also presented this week at the public meetings detailed KMZ files showing property impacts, very conceptual, high-level right-of-way estimates based on the data we have right now. And so we allowed everybody to come around and look at, we had 9 stations set up. They could come and talk to us, ask for their particular address, and we'd show them our best guess right now at what the impacts to their individual property might look like. But just very quickly, we'll go through each one of these scenarios. West Alternative 1, we're looking at building a 4-lane I-69 bridge and maintaining 141 crossing. West Alternative 2, building a 6-lane I-69 bridge, not maintaining either of the 41 crossings. And then Central 1, building a 4-lane I-69 bridge and maintaining a single US 41 crossing. So then, again, just kind of a graphical representation of what each one of those look like. West Alternative 1, again, we just said building a 4-lane I-69 bridge and keeping 141 bridge open to traffic. We're estimating right now about 213 relocations would be necessary to build that project because of the impacts primarily along the west side of the strip. So this really kind of gets close to the Elm Street area. So you're about a block off to the west of existing US 41. Not all of those are individual houses. I should point that out though. Several apartment buildings are affected. So when we say relocations there, it's 213 units, not all just houses. Plus there's a trailer park to the north that's also impacted. It has several relocations associated with it. 21 businesses. We're working with the Planning Commission. We've got some meetings coming up to look at what we would do to the remnant of the US 41 strip. So the 3D drive-through and fly-throughs that you see behind you just show one opportunity or one option, and we're going to be discussing others. And so for those of you that might remember the US 41 traffic and access management study that was done 2 years ago, we're going to be looking at some concepts similar to what was presented back at that time. Because the context of US 41 is going to change, obviously. You're taking the motor trucks off, the interstate traffic off, and so the needs aren't going to be the same as what's out there today. The US 60 interchange will remain where it is on the south side. We'll have to reconstruct it, obviously, to provide this interstate connection. And then new interchanges are only proposed at Watson Lane. And the reason we're not having any additional interchanges to the north is because US 41 will remain in place. So it'll provide access to the north to Ottoman Park and to Ellis Park and Mutual Drive to the north, whereas Western Alternative 2 shows interchanges there. Some subtle adjustments have been made to miss some of the environmental resources like Eagle Slough to the north, but very much similar to what we presented last summer, what this alternative looks like. Total cost estimate, and this is in year of expenditure dollars, so looking out for the next 35 years, about $1.466 billion. West Alternative 2, again, this is, we're not maintaining a 41 bridge in this option, so this is a single I-69 bridge with six lanes. So both of the 41 bridges, again, are removed from service. 119 residential relocations, 58 businesses. So basically, everything along the west side of US 41, all the businesses are essentially taken away. And so the reason we're showing the drive-through specific to West 2 is so you get a better idea of how close that is to the existing 41 strip. And the fact that all the businesses along the west side are not shown on that drive-through is accurate. It's taking all the businesses. New interchanges are included with this one at Watson Lane, as I just mentioned, similar to West 1, Stratton, Wolf Hills to the north, and then at Nugent Drive to provide access to Ellis Park on the north side of the road. $1.487 billion is the cost estimate for West 2. Central 1, we're looking at maintaining a single US 41 bridge with two lanes. Therefore, we're looking at building an initial four-lane I-69 crossing to the east. Only two residential relocations are required. Obviously, you're bypassing the 41 corridor altogether. And so we're also, in terms of talking with the Planning Commission, West 1 and West 2, obviously there are opportunities, but also with Central 1 to reconstruct or reconfigure the US 41 strip once this project is constructed. The only new interchanges are right here. This is to provide access from the future I-69 back over to US 41 and over to Green Street to go downtown. We can't really construct an interchange in the vicinity of the existing US 41 because of the floodway surrounding Canoe Creek. It kind of tends to complicate that. So we've actually shifted that interchange a little bit further to the east, provided a new connector road to go back over towards the existing US 60 interchange. The only real new interchange besides that one would be at US 60. And so we're showing a modest realignment just a few hundred feet south, and that's to avoid direct impacts to historic properties on both sides of US 60 at that location. Cost estimate for Central 1 in year expenditure is about $1.415 billion. So as I've already kind of mentioned, the NEPA process doesn't determine tolls, toll rates, toll policies, or any kind of business plans associated with that. So what we can say right now, though, is based on all of the scenarios that we have looked at thus far, this project, it cannot pay for itself. There is not a single scenario out there that we have seen that would be able to pay for 100% of this project. So we're going to be looking at a financial plan similar to what was done at Louisville that's going to include a wide variety of funding sources. Hopefully there's some grant opportunities in the future, but state and federal funding are obviously going to be a portion of the overall financial plan. What we have told the public this week, though, is that based on everything we know today, I-69 will be tolled. The future of US 41, we don't know. We're looking at scenarios that include tolling and non-tolling US 41. But we just truly don't know the answer to that one yet. But tolling 41 is an option that's under consideration. So,
but only for the two routes, right?
Only for, yeah. Only,
the two corridors.
Only for West 1 and Central 1, because West 2 would not maintain 41. So that you wouldn't toll a crossing because there's not a crossing there for traffic.
Got it.
So, wrap-up slide, schedule for the project moving forward. Again, it's our intent to have a draft EIS published this fall, so that will basically have our preferred alternative outlined then. And then by the fall of 2019, have a final environmental impact statement, and hopefully a rigorous decision so the project can move forward. I got any questions? I took a little bit longer than I was supposed to. I apologize for that. So hopefully everybody found that kind of somewhat informational.
I have one question for you, and maybe you may or may not be in a position to answer this as of yet. So each of those scenarios, though, it impacts a different mix of residential and businesses. And looking at all, especially mostly for the Henderson hearing, what have you been hearing from the businesses over there based upon these three corridor options, that how they feel about, because, I mean, certainly the central corridor would have less of an impact upon businesses in terms of taking out businesses,
right.
But I would think that scenario could have a very significant impact upon traffic patterns, which may impact businesses. What are you hearing from them in that regard?
I'll let Steve elaborate, but I can tell you I've heard opinions both ways.
Both ways.
And okay. It's, you know, the concern is Central One is building a bypass, really. And so, you know, studies have shown that bypasses affect different types of businesses differently. Your gas stations and things, you know, fast food restaurants tend to be those that are more significantly adversely impacted because they rely on that bypass traffic. But, or that traffic that's in front of the business. Whereas your destination type businesses, you know, grocery stores, supermarkets, things like that, tend to be less adverse. But then there's also the direct impact that is concerning, right. Because obviously if you're a business owner on the west side, you're probably not a real big fan of West 2. West 1, you know, the argument I've heard from some people is that you still have the visibility. You know, you've got the signage on the interstate that says, you know, fast food this exit with the proposed Watson Lane interchange. And so you still have the opportunity.
Right.
You see the business, you see the signage, and you've got a quick access to get to it. So I've heard it both ways, and Steve, you might be able to add to that, but I can't say there would have been a definitive one way or the other.
Right. Well, we're just this week sending out our own survey to businesses, so we expect to hear a lot more through this survey. And when you mentioned your survey, I was a little surprised, really, because we're sending out two surveys in the next week. One to targeted for environmental justice communities, and the other for businesses. So we're going to be peppering people with surveys here pretty soon. Anyway, we've talked one-on-one with a number of businesses, and what they'll say in a public forum versus what they'll say to you. Private is different.
Sure.
They don't want all their neighbors getting taken either, you know. But we can see some benefits. Other businesses say, you know, their customers can't safely turn left out of their business for a good portion of the day. So.
And now.
Now. So yeah. Changing the traffic and the type of traffic on 41 could help them. You know, so it spans the gamut, really. There's so many different types of businesses.
Well, the great thing about the project is there's still lots of time for public comment and comment from all across the board. Any other questions, comments, anything else that you want to add up, finish up with, or anything? Any questions?
Yeah, are you, as far as West Alternative 2, it sounds like it would wipe out a lot of the businesses. I'm just curious, are you looking at different alternatives that might basically be that alternative, but maybe not be quite as wide, maybe a little narrower, maybe one-way frontage roads instead of two ways that might reduce those impacts, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, we have looked at a few different options through the strip there, but all of them have pretty devastating right-of-way impacts, because if you're going to provide enough capacity to service the demand, you're going to need the 6 lanes on the interstate. And, you know, regardless if it's a one-way frontage road on each side or a two-way frontage road on one side, it's just where are the right-of-way impacts going to be focused? It's going to be one side of the interstate or the other. So, but yeah, we've looked at a variety of different options.
Yeah, I wasn't really clear. I was watching the fly-through, and it looked like there was a two-way frontage road. So is that only on one side? There would be another one on the other side of the interstate?
There is some reconfiguring of what is currently Elm Street to the west side in order just to maintain connectivity along the west.
Okay.
But the majority of the work, what you're seeing there is specific to US 41 because we wanted to show how close it is and how the grades change with that western alternative, with West 2, because there's always been some confusion as to whether it's elevated or it's not elevated. And so what we're showing is that it's a lot like the Lloyd Expressway.
Mm-hmm.
And our Watson Lane interchange is a lot like Green River Road or Bakey Road, where you raise it up to go over the existing crossroad to provide an interchange underneath.
I wish we had all that green now. It looks pretty good. It looks a lot different. Any other comments, questions, or anything? This is your opportunity. We would have the capability of getting some of the presentations and materials.
Sure.
Thank you very much. This is the section of the meeting where we take any other public comments. Are there any particular public comments? Anything else? And I apologize for asking too many questions today. So. Anything? If not, I would entertain a motion for adjournment then. Or I guess, do you even want to?